You're listening to the Post-Apocalyptic Media Podcast. If it's post-apocalyptic, we're talking about it.
Hey everyone, welcome back to this 49th episode of the Post-Apocalyptic Media Podcast. I am your host, Sean. I'm the senior editor here at Post-Apocalyptic Media. And each week I do this, I talk a lot and I talk about the news, the post-apocalyptic news of that week. This week is no exception. As usual, we have a lot to talk about. And it's crazy to think this is episode 49. So next episode is episode 50. You'd think I would do something special for that, right? Let's see how that goes. Anyway, let's go ahead and get right into the news because that's why you're here, right? All right. So we have the website right there, Post-Apocalyptic Media. You can get to it by going to postapocalyptic.com, of course. And just last week, right after I recorded, the same day I recorded, there was some big news that came out, and that was the Snowpiercer Season 3 release date. Now, we knew that there was a Season 3, right? If you're a Snowpiercer fan, you know that they literally announced Season 3 before Season 2 had even, I think it was before it even happened. And then they announced Season 4 this summer before Season 3 had even happened. So we knew there was going to be a Season 3. We knew there was going to be a Season 4. But we just didn't know when. Well, now we have a release date for Season 3, which is January 24th. Look at there. They have a little announcement thing there. 1/24/22. That will be when Season 3 starts. Now, if you remember, any fans out there may know, fans of Snowpiercer and of Post-Apocalyptic Media, may know that I usually write a review and recap of each episode. And, you know, during last year's Season 2. Well, at the end of Season 2, this isn't really spoilerific, maybe tiny bit, we know that Andre Layton, took part of the train and he was going to go rescue Melanie, right? And that's kind of where we left off. Well, some things happened, which I won't really get into, but that's where we left off. He separated his little train and Alex, who is Melanie's daughter, went to go rescue her, and they're separated from everyone else. So it's like, how are we going to get back to this? How, you know, are they going to get back on the main train? Are they going to reconnect, which was actually their plan after rescuing Melanie? We don't know. But with Season 3 and Season 4 in the horizon, you know, in the future here, in the next couple of years, I mean, they usually do two seasons a year, so we'll see how that goes. How far it takes us, but we're looking at the possibility. This is my own call, right? Because this show was based on a movie, but it's far beyond the movie. Like it and the book, you know, it's far beyond all that. And my call at this point, as a fan of the show, is that they're going to get to the point where they're going to get off the train, probably Season 4, and they're going to, you know, they started showing a little bit of snow melting and maybe grass, you know, the grass will pop up from there and they're going to maybe get off the train at some point and rebuild humanity, right? That's kind of what I'm thinking. I think we'll see that in Season 4. I don't know. I think at that point it might be a different show. It would be called like Snow Melter or something. I don't know. And maybe they would have spinoffs. You know, they rebuild a new colony with all the people, and I don't know. I don't think it would go that far, but you never know with TV shows these days. So there you have it. There's, you know, Season 3 will be January 24th. Season 2 actually debuted on January 25th of this year. So it kind of, you know, it's right on schedule. It makes sense. And then a Season 4 will probably be in the fall, I would say. So there they are. Melanie, Layton, and Mr. Wilford. We're going to see them again. Good news. All right, speaking of good news, let's get on to the next little bit here. There's another Philip K. Dick novel getting the movie treatment with Vulcan's Hammer. Vulcan's Hammer was the novel he wrote in 1960. And it was actually right before, he wrote it right before he wrote, what's that Amazon show? Man in the, they have it in here somewhere. I say they, me. Man in the High Castle. Man in the High Castle for Amazon was a hugely popular show. And that's actually a Philip K. Dick. People don't know that. You know, the same guy who wrote the book that inspired Blade Runner and the book that inspired Total Recall. And actually kind of inspired Terminator, you know. That same guy wrote A Man in the High Castle. And Amazon took it over in, 2015, something like that. So this is another adaptation, another movie adaptation, straight from the book. Francis Lawrence, who's the director, he directed Hunger Games and I Am Legend. So you know he has some cred, right? He also directed a couple episodes of C, Apple's TV show C. So he has like post-apoc cred, right? He knows what he's doing. He knows the genre. And he's going to be directing this. So that's good news, right? And if you're wondering what this book is about, it's basically, okay, so society, there's this big war that happens and society crumbles, you know, as happens after wars. And there's this new organization called Unity. And Unity is led by an AI. And the AI is called Vulcan. So that's where you get Vulcan's Hammer. Now, there are different Vulcan machines, and there's a Vulcan 2, which becomes sentient, and then there's a Vulcan 3, which also becomes sentient. But Vulcan 3 is the one that is, it's kind of a major, like the fact that it becomes sentient is a big deal because it starts making killer robots. And then you have people who split up. You know, there are people who are pro Vulcan 3 and the people who are against Vulcan 3. It's kind of amazing because I think that's exactly what would happen. It doesn't matter what would happen. People would find a way to be just militantly against it or militantly for it. You know what I mean? And they would fight each other for it. So that's kind of what this is about. And it's also kind of a mystery. There's like a little bit of crime going on when some people die and there's a private investigator kind of investigation that's going on. It's a whole different, you know, side of the book, but it seems really interesting. I never read the book, but I just read the synopsis on it, and it seems really interesting, and I'd be interested in seeing this because I'm a fan of his, you know. Of course, this will be the 14th novel of his that's been turned into a movie. 14. If you go on his wiki page, it lists all of them, and that, you know, that's just movies. There are also TV shows like Man in the High Castle, right? There are comics that were adapted, all kinds of stuff. Blade Runner was based on Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which is a huge, you know, of course, that's a huge novel, probably his most popular novel. Who Can Remember It For You Wholesale? A lot of people don't know that's the actual name that Total Recall was based on, that book. So it's good stuff. It's definitely good stuff. I'm excited for... I mean, I'm always excited when there's a new post-apocalyptic movie, but I'm excited when there's book adaptations, especially, you know, popular novelists who kind of turn, you know, go that way. And Philip K. Dick's stuff is really great. There's a lot of stuff about robots taking over the world, which is always a great thing, always a fun thing. All right, let's go on to this next little bit of news. This one I found very interesting. There's this game, this was actually let me point to it over here, right there. This was actually a PlayStation 4 exclusive in 2016. It's called The Tomorrow Children. And the basis of the game, it's a weird, weird game. They were trying to kind of build off of the popularity of Minecraft because there's a lot of building. There's a lot of like voxel graphics, you know, things like that. And so they took that and it's kind of out in the void. There's like nothing around it. You just build in the middle of nothing. So that's just keep that in your mind right there because that's a strange part of it. Then also, they're doing a kind of a neo-Soviet socialist part of it where you know, it's playing off of that, which is kind of cool. I mean, like, you know, Metro did that, and there's a lot of post-apocalyptic Russian games that kind of play off of, you know, the 80s and 70s and even into the 90s. You know, what would have happened if socialism in the USSR continued, you know, or things like that. So it's an interesting take on that political side of it. There's the building side of it, but then the Tomorrow Children. So these are kids. So you're playing as kids. It's an online game. You could play cooperatively with other people, and apparently it didn't do so well. So this came out, you know, Sony put it out as an exclusive, and I'm not really sure why it didn't do so well. From what I've read, I read a lot of comments on Reddit and things like that, trying to figure out what is it about this game that made people just completely hate it. But it's funny. It's like any other game. There's people who hate it, and there's people who absolutely love it. People who dedicate, you know, fan sites and stuff like that to it. So those people, of course, are going to be excited to see this game come back. The guy who originally started it, let's see, what's his name? Dylan Cuthbert. So Dylan is the founder and director of Q Games, and he made this video called Welcome to Postcards from the Void. Postcards from the Void is like their newsletter, and it's something you can sign up for if you're interested in finding out more information about when the game will come back, you know, the development process, all that kind of good stuff. So he kind of talks about that in this video. And, you know, I think if you're a fan, it's definitely something you should sign up for, you know, to see that how things go with it and the whole process. But it seems to me, I mean, I didn't play this game. I never had a PlayStation 4. I was always an Xbox guy. But it just seems weird. I don't know. I titled this one of the strangest post-apocalyptic games is coming back. Just from everything I saw, the videos and everything. Let me show you this little bit of this trailer here. This will give you an idea of what it's like. Turn it down a little bit. Japan Studio was a studio that helped work on it with Q Games. But Japan Studio's not around anymore. So Q Games got the exclusive rights. See, there's kind of the Minecraft part of it. You know, the building, and you see the void in the background, right? There's nothing there. So that gives you an idea of... There's the cooperative part, I guess. Throwing gold to another player. But that gives you an idea of what this is all about. What it, you know, what it entails. Here's some of the game's features. Freeform, malleable terrain. So, Minecraft, right? Large-scale multiplayer co-op play. You can make buildings, turrets, Tesla towers, and even potted plants to personalize the town the way you want it. You fight creatures. So there is an aspect of kind of PvE, you know, where you're fighting creatures that range from tiny spiders in dark caves to enormous marauding kaiju. You defend the town from attack with rocket launchers, turrets, and tanks. So it's not a fantasy game. You know, it's a like they said, neo-Soviet setting. Use void powers to create or carve terrain. Explore 40 surreal landscapes to discover treasure, resources, and mysterious creatures. Experience a richly imagined neo-Soviet alternative future. So, like I was saying, it's kind of like what would happen if the USSR never dissolved. It kind of goes from there. And here it says, drink voidka and give your character unique perks. That's not a typo. It's not supposed to be vodka, and I just threw an I in there accidentally. It's called voidka. It's like this play on vodka, of course, and this void, that's a big part of this game, is the void. And then restore the population of the world. That's the last key point. That's always a good last key point. So, yeah, I have information here where you can sign up for the newsletter, watch a couple videos, and, you know, if you're interested in getting back into the game. Speaking of getting back into games, this is actually some news that's not on our site. I'll probably write it up before this comes out, but this is from Eurogamer. Bethesda has a one-pager for Fallout 5, but it's a long way off. So here's the thing. people get really excited, you know, about this stuff. And the time frame between since we had Fallout 4, it's been a long time, right? I forgot when it was. It's been a long time. Was it like 2012 or something like that? So it's like almost 10 years. And as you might imagine, people are getting excited. Skyrim came out a little bit before Fallout 4, so that's kind of a focus for him. You know, in this interview with Eurogamer, Todd Howard, studio director Todd Howard, talks about how they're going to focus on Elder Scrolls 6 first. Like, they're not even going to get to Fallout 5 yet. But before, even before that, even before Elder Scrolls 6, they're going to do this Starfield game, which is like a sci-fi, you know, space game. I'm not even really sure everything that's, they've been really secretive about it, but they're saying that's going to be first. So the fact that they don't even have anything out about that yet, and then we're going to do Elder Scrolls 6, and then we're going to do Fallout 5, I mean, we're talking, I don't know, like 6-7 years probably, at least. Maybe closer to 10 years. So that, I mean, that would put it to where between Fallout 4 and Fallout 5 is 20 years? Are we going to wait 20 years for the next Fallout game? I don't know. I mean, since the last one, so it'd be like another 10 years. I would be in my 30s, right? I would be in my 50s, and I don't know if I would be playing it. I got to tell you, my kids probably would, but, you know, I don't know. That's kind of crazy. So my question to you, audience, is would you wait that long for a Fallout 5, you know? Or are you kind of over it? Are you kind of, you know, Fallout 76 spoiled a lot of things for people. Even though it's great, I really like Fallout 76. It's, you know, the online version basically of Fallout 4. It's a fun enough game. I don't play it all the time because I don't know. Just haven't, you know, I've done it. I've already played it and I've already played Fallout 4 and I you know, I don't know. I think if I had like a group that I played with, you know, all the time, I'd probably play it a lot. It's a fun enough game. But for Fallout 5, I mean, are we going to wait that long for that? And I think the answer is probably yes for a lot of people, because if you think back on when the original games, you know, came out, when did the original, I mean, if you want to go back to Wasteland, that was 88. That was a long time ago. And then, of course, Fallout 1 was what, like 97, I think, is when Fallout 1 came out. That was a long time ago. It wasn't a long time ago for me. I remember it very vividly. But in the scope of actual time, that's a long time ago. We had Fallout 1, Fallout 2, Fallout 3, which was 2008. I hope I'm not wrong on these dates. I'm totally trying to remember. I'm pretty sure it was 2008 for Fallout 3, then 2012-ish, probably right around there for Fallout 4. So there hasn't, I mean, there was a lot of time between 2 and 3, but nothing like we're experiencing now, waiting for Fallout 5. But here's what I took from this. Number one, he's kind of confirming a Fallout 5. I mean, I would be fine right now if he said we're not doing anymore. We're going to focus on improving Fallout 4 and improving Fallout 76. I'd be like, well, great. I will go with that. You know, that's fine with me. But there are a lot of people out there who are really kind of, I would say, bigger, you know, more hardcore into these games than I am. Although I do have a Fallout tattoo. Let's see if we can, where's it at? I have a little Fallout Boy tattoo right there. So I'm a big fan, as you can see. But I don't know. I think that if they were to, it's kind of like when your favorite band retires after 40 years, you know, you're kind of like, well, yeah, I mean, you did great for 40 years. You have a legacy. You've entertained us for a long time. We've gotten a lot out of you, you know, a lot out of your performances. And I get it. Time to retire. That's fine. And I kind of feel like if they said that about Fallout, I'd be fine with it. But they're not. They're saying Fallout 5. there's a one-page document on Fallout 5. It's a possibility. So, you know, you're saying there's a chance. Yes, we're saying there's a chance. So this is a great little... Here's the quote from... I think this is the one from Todd Howard. It says, we've worked with other people... Now, this right here, this quote is in regards to kind of passing it off to another development studio. Eurogamer asked him about that, you know, because Obsidian, of course, is now part of... You know, Microsoft bought Bethesda and Obsidian and all these things. So it's kind of like Microsoft money now that they're dealing with, which opens up the possibility to really kind of go nuts with Fallout 5. So Eurogamer said, well, what do you think about, you know, passing on to someone else? Let them do it. And he said, well, we've worked with other people from time to time. I can't say what's going to happen. If I could wave my hand and have Fallout 5 out now, you know, I'd like to find a way to accelerate what we do. But I can't really say today or commit to anything. What's going to happen when, other than our cadence, is Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6? Basically what I just said. So, if you're a fan, keep holding out hope. I'm going to hold out hope. But, like I said, I could go either way. If they say we're retiring it, I'll be like, wow, I had a lot of fun with that game. Like years and years and years with that game, you know? And it's great. But I think they would be crazy to stop it. They just like if they stopped Elder Scrolls. They'd be crazy, crazy to stop it. So don't think they're going to. That's like GTA. You know, they're talking about making GTA 6. They would be crazy to not make GTA 6. Oh, those games are so popular. All right. So my last bit of thing that I wanted to talk about here in the next few minutes is the movie Finch. Stephanie wrote a review for it on the site. She calls it a heartwarming post-apocalyptic movie. Her review, she actually breaks it up into two parts. She has the non-spoiler section, which talks about kind of the general thing. And that's what I'm going to talk about here. I don't want to get into spoilers. But then after that, she has the spoilers, where it gets a little bit further into, you know, the things she specifically liked about the movie. Now, let me just kind of run it through. So Finch is a Tom Hanks movie. It came out on Apple TV Plus last Friday. It is a post-apocalyptic movie, definitely. He is a robotics engineer who survived the end of the world. He's about 10 years. I think it's about 10 years after the end of the world happened. And it's a solar event. The sun is intense. So they show many times when he goes outside, he has to cover up, you know, he has to watch out for the radiation from the sun and also the exposure to the actual sun itself, the light from the sun. There are holes in the ozone layer where there's just the sun is not filtered. It goes straight through. And where he's at in this robotics warehouse or whatever it is, that's something like that. He's lived there for 10 years. It's like a bunker. And he, you know, he has his dog. His dog's name is Goodyear, and he rescued that dog. They show a little flashback of how he obtained Goodyear, and he rescued it from a family that was having some problems with some raiders, you know, and he rescued the dog. And this is when the dog was really tiny. So he has a relationship with his dog. You know, he loves this dog. It's his best friend. It's his only friend, you know, and they show just him and kind of his daily routine of how he lives his life, you know, in this bunker. Well, it's gotten to the point where he's getting really sick from the constant exposure to radiation. And they show him reading a book about it and kind of, you know, brushing up on his knowledge of what's going to happen to him from all this exposure to radiation. So he knows that he needs to find someone to take care of Goodyear. So the only thing he knows how to do, being a robotics engineer, is to make a robot. He actually, you see at the beginning of the movie, he has another robot that follows him around. It's like this little, it's on tank treads, kind of a little, it's like dog-sized, but it's a little robot, you know. And it helps him out. It carries stuff for him when he goes out scavenging and stuff like that. So we already have established the fact that he knows robots. He knows how to make them. He knows how to create them to do what he wants. So when he starts making this new robot, he's using parts that he finds all around, including the camera, the lens from his current robot, which he replaces later, which is a whole comedy gold part right there. But so he's using parts and pieces, and he develops the AI, and he programs this thing to start learning from itself, right? So this robot, who calls himself Jeff, which is kind of hilarious, you see his progression as he's learning about life. He's learning about how to do things. And Tom Hanks gives him these robotic directives. He's like Isaac Asimov robotic directives. And the last one is, you know, overall, over anything else, you have to make sure you protect that dog. That is your number one priority. And as it's learning, you know, it's discovering that it's a curious kid. You know, this robot is like a curious kid, and it's bumbling, and it's making mistakes, and it's doing things here and there. And he keeps saying, you know, hey, you have to take care of that dog. And so you have that aspect of it. You know, it's a buddy movie. It's him and the robot. It's also a dog buddy movie. You know, it's Tom Hanks and the dog, and you have that part of it. It's also like a road trip movie, because they travel out west to try to see things. You know, he has like a bucket list since he's dying, and he wants to take everyone out to basically to San Francisco, to the Golden Gate Bridge. He wants to see the Golden Gate Bridge, and he wants to do all these things before he dies. So he, along the way, he's teaching this robot, Jeff, how to live life and how to do things and how to take care of Goodyear. And that's basically it. That's the whole movie, you know? There's no like huge bad guy conflict, you know? There's no just destruction of Tom Hanks's character, where he has to build himself back up. I mean, it's a cut and dry road trip movie, buddy movie, dog movie. And it's not to say it's bad. It's just, to me, it seems basic. It seems very basic. It seems like, you know, if you want to watch a feel-good movie, this is it. It's a feel-good movie. It has sad parts. It has funny parts. It's for the family. I mean, your whole family can watch it. And I think Stephanie points that out in here. She says, you know, it's something that your grandmother can watch with you. Yeah, definitely. A lot of people are calling it like Castaway meets, I don't know. I mean, any of these other movies, like WALL-E, I guess it's a good one because of the robot. But there a lot of people are mixing other Tom Hanks movies, which is easy because he's been in so many movies, right? He's been in so many different types of movies. Even Stephanie points out here, he was Mr. Rogers. So she's even saying, you know, he has kind of a Mr. Rogers feel to it. He has his daily routine. He's a good guy. You know, he's doing things for the betterment of, you know, society and his dog and things like that. And that's it. You know, it's, again, like I said, there's not a deep underlying story here, really. There's no, you know, there's not going to be book clubs about this movie or this, you know, yeah, this movie where they're going to try to figure out what's going on. I mean, it's just a movie about, you know, feeling good about this stuff. Now, here's some other parts of it. Like, it is post-apocalyptic, but that part of it is really in the background. There are times when he, you know, he goes outside and he burns up, like his hand goes in the sunlight. He always has to stay in the shade. His hand goes out in the sunlight and it starts burning, like sizzling. And that shows us just how powerful the sun is when there's no, you know, ozone to filter it. And then, so you have that part of it. You have, I mean, a great desolation. There's a really cool, you know, atmosphere with the cityscape, with the sand everywhere. Everything's a wasteland. That's really well done. Probably one of my favorite parts of that, of the aesthetic part of it, is their RV. They have this RV. It's armored up. It's lifted. It has these huge, you know, like desert sand tires on it. It has solar power, it has this whole solar array that comes out. It's a really cool rig. It's like a bug out vehicle, like the ultimate bug out vehicle. I don't know where they get the gas for it. Actually, I think they kind of address that. But anyway, it's that's cool to me as a car guy. I really enjoyed that. I think if Tina ever does her Carmageddon, you know, car versus car thing, she needs to put that in the next one. But I really enjoyed that part. I like the aesthetic of it. It's just, I don't know. I don't know how else to describe it other than it's a good movie. You know, I would say it's even a very good movie. Two of the most basic words, you know, very good. Eh, there you go. It's probably not going to win any Oscars. And I say that and it's, you know, maybe it will. But, you know, it's a good movie. If you have a couple hours where you just want to watch a feel-good movie with a post-apocalyptic background, this is it. And you can watch it for free. I wrote a thing on how to watch it. It's not available on Hulu. It's not available on Netflix or Amazon. It's just Apple Plus. It's an exclusive for Apple Plus, Apple TV Plus. But you can get a free trial. If you have an Apple product that you bought within the last year, you probably already have Apple TV Plus, but they give it to you for free. So check that. If you don't have it already, you can get a 7-day trial. I think if you have a PlayStation 5, you can get a 6-month trial. So if you do that, you have to catch up on C. You have to watch, what's the other one? Foundation. You got to catch up on all that if you get Apple Plus for that long. So yeah, I recommend the movie. I think it's really good. Now some other things that have been covered on the site that, this is all Stephanie. I'm not going to get into it too much, but so we have Walking Dead World Beyond season 2, episode 6. She talks about why it's missing for some viewers. Here's my article on, watching Finch where you can watch it. 86 is they're on episode 16. Fear the Walking Dead season 7 episode 4 review and recap Stephanie's done. Foundation episode 8, that's season 1 episode 8, that's the one I was just talking about. That is worth a watch. That's a really good show, I think, personally. And then we have, I think that's it right now. That's pretty much caught up with all the reviews and recaps. Yeah, but if you want to see more, of course, there's more on the site, then you can check it out at postapocalyptic.com. I'm going to plug, once again, our short story contest, because I think we're getting a lot of good submissions, but I want to be busy reading, like, you know, 24 of these. And we're not there yet, but I would love to have that many to read through. And kind of, you know, pick the very best one. And it's not just me judging, it's everyone else at the site also. But I think it's a cool contest. It's our first year doing it. Basically 3,000 to 5,000 words about post-apocalyptic, some kind of post-apocalyptic thing that happened. And we have prizes, we have cash prizes, we have these really cool like things. I don't know if we can really say it yet, so maybe I won't say it. But it's a trophy. It's a really cool trophy that will be shown at a later date. So if you are a writer and you're into post-apocalyptic stuff, which I'm sure you are if you're listening and watching this, just whip something up. You know, whip up your best little short story and submit it. You might win. You never know, right? You never know till you try. So I want to thank everyone for watching and listening to me talk about my favorite stuff, and I will maybe next time we'll have something big, something special for episode 50. We'll see what happens, but yeah, that's next week. So everyone, thanks for watching, thanks for listening, and stay alive out there, and always be ready for the big one. Thanks. Bye.